Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. And it's, you know, we talked about being, you know, being for doing some podcasting from time to time. And just to have something that's really resonating, as well as those times to take calls and see what's on your mind. And we've been kind of dealing with this little bit of a corrective phase we're going through now, and all the fear that that's brought about, all the predictions of the Third World War and all these other things that have come up. Should we be buying gold and all these other, you know, go buy an annuity, right? Throw it in there and hide because it's guaranteed. And it's also, unfortunately, guaranteed not to work and guaranteed to trap you in it and all those other things that go when we're driven by fear. And then I often say, and repeat it over and over again, whether it's here, Zoom meetings, general meetings, that we're not in the business of predicting. And that's absolutely true. We're not. People think they are, because every day when you turn on CNBC, they don't have anybody on there that doesn't have a prediction for them. Because they don't come on. They won't put up with them. They won't be invited back. So Joe Jones from Edward Jones or whoever, right? It comes on and goes, you know, well, we see interest rates doing this. We think the Fed's going to do that. We think that the markets should be at X by the end of the year. And they're never right. And they aren't. And that's really not the point of this. The point is that we try not to be predictive, but it doesn't mean we don't have strong opinions. And so we got an interesting email from a client that mentioned that, well, if you don't have predictions of what's going to happen, and if all it matters that everybody's wrong with their predictions, then what do we do? I mean, why hire you because you have no clue? And I thought that was an interesting point, but also misses the point, right? It's not that we don't have opinions. We have very, very strong opinions. I think that anybody who listens to this show for any period of time would say, yeah, Dave does not pull any punches about what his opinions are. That's absolutely true. I have opinions of where interest rates are. I have opinions politically. I have opinions about the Federal Reserve and why did they become political and printing money we don't have. Government intervention in places they shouldn't be intervening. All those things. We all have all those opinions. What should business be doing? But predicting when something is going to happen is never right. And directing your portfolio because you are sure, or you're predicting that this year we'll have 3 rate increases. Well, I'm sorry, there were 18. Well, if everything was betting on, or most was betting on only 3, then you were so far out of position, you got crushed. I mean, it could have been a devastating experience for something that simple, that seemingly unimportant. You can't invest in the market when interest rates are rising, particularly tech stocks. And the dead opposite happens of that. So not only did you miss out on that, you might have been sitting in cash and completely missed out on the move in growth stocks when interest rates were rising. And it was significant, 50% plus for the Mag 7. That, by the way, is gone, and you can't have it back. And that's just one example. And so as we keep on going on and trying to make this differentiation of having an opinion, of positioning, of not acting in an all or none manner, is why we continue to talk about the fact that nobody knows what the future holds. And that means you temper your arrogance, your certainty about what you do. It doesn't mean, this is again getting back to my strong opinions, that Wall Street pretends to never be wrong when they're always wrong by some magnitude. And how do they do that? They continue to change what their outlook is, right? I mean, as the year unfolds, 12 little months. And if you've been around for any period of time, you know what I mean by 12 little months. Because the end of 24 will be as quick as the end of 23 was. It's the way life is. It's fast. It's really, really fast. And through this 1 year, Wall Street will have predicted that S&P will go to 5,300. Then by June, we will have changed that forecast. 3 times by June. Then by the end of the year, we'll have refined it for 3 more times till we're really precisely within the ballpark of where the market will finish, because we changed our prediction 1 more time at the beginning of December. Of what value that has, I don't know. I honestly don't know. Why me having an opinion of where the S&P is going to finish has any importance to a person's portfolio? I do not know. I really don't know. If I thought so, I would play the game. Okay? Even if I knew I'd be wrong, it's really important, so I'll play the game. But what I think the real importance is to teach that this is not of any importance. Not, you don't have to agree with me. All of Wall Street doesn't, because they're selling time on TV. They're selling their opinion, because that's what Wall Street has to have. J.P. Morgan said this. Goldman Sachs said that. And the Federal Reserve, makes some comment, and then we have to try to decipher what all of that means. When the Federal Reserve says we're going to raise rates 3 times, and it's the equivalent of 18 quarter point increases, that's so far off, I can't even imagine. And so what does Wall Street do? Predict, change, and then change all year long. So at the end of the year, we are close to what we predicted 3 weeks before, and we're nowhere in the ballpark compared to where we started the year. It has no value. And that's what I'm trying to say. There's nothing wrong with having an opinion, and we have, as I've said, and as you know, I have very strong opinions. And it doesn't mean, though, that I have strong predictions of when those things are going to occur. We don't. We tell ourselves we don't, and we should not, because they're always wrong, and it can cause great harm. What doesn't cause great harm is to have great, if you will, opinions. Strong opinions. Thoughtful opinions. And what do I mean by opinions? Stocks always beat bonds in the long run. This year, don't know, and I'm not going to predict it. Next year, don't know. Over the next 3 years, don't know which one's going to win. But in the long run, the rest of our lives, stocks provide an ever-increasing amount of income, and they will beat bonds. They will destroy gold. They will beat cash. They will beat real estate. They will beat everything else on the planet, and your actual amount of involvement is zero. There's nothing like it on the planet. But in between that great understanding, that peace of mind that this is the best single thing you could be doing, in between that and just leaving alone and watching the money roll in, watching your wealth build, is this whole world of prediction. Interest rates are high. Interest rates are low. Can't buy this. Don't do that. PE ratios are too high. With inflation booming out of control, this is going to happen. With the deficit exploding here, with JoJo in charge, that's what's going to happen. All of this is noise between the fundamental opinion based in fact. All of history is that stocks will win. And in between all that is all of this noise that I'm trying to say is prediction is not important. And we therefore don't play that game. Having opinions, and those opinions change and grow as we grow, that's what's important. We need to understand that our opinion is not that interest rates are at zero and are going to go higher next year. Okay? So you shouldn't own bonds. Our opinion, our strong opinion, and why we were so right for what turned out to be so long. And when I say so right, go ahead. Well, God, is that an arrogant thing, just pointing out how great they were? Yes, fine, whatever. Call it whatever you want. We owned no bonds for like 15 years. not because we said interest rates are going to go up and destroy your bond portfolio. But it's my opinion that it's a really bad idea. In fact, let me rephrase it. It would be anybody's opinion if you just simplified it and thought about it. Okay? But my opinion, very, very strong opinion, is you should own no bonds in a zero interest rate world. I don't think that's complicated. I don't think that's rocket science. I don't think that you have to be a highly educated Wall Street babbling baboon to have a strong opinion that buying bonds when interest rates are at 2% on 10-year treasuries for years, and inflation is running over that, and you have to pay taxes on the money, that's not going to work to build a portfolio. Just say, that may be a way out there, overly strong opinion, but I'm going to own it. That's not predictive. Predictive is interest rates are going to go higher 6 months from now. Here's what the Fed does, and this is what is worthless in my mind. I don't have to know that to not own bonds. I don't have to have. So when I say something like, which I do all the time, and I say, we know there's going to be a correction coming. Typically, it happens multiple times a year at 5% or greater. And you'd think the end of the world was here when it does. But typical doesn't mean every year. Typical is simply, it's kind of like I pointed out in a recent Zoom meeting we did. When you predict that we are going to have 4.5 corrections, 5% corrections in a year, which is, you know, the average, you can't have a 0.5. So when we have that, we also have years that have zero, and we have years that have 14, 20. It is a pointless average, and yet this is the stuff that we all walk around with and use as a prediction of what's going to happen and why it's so wrong and why it has no value. Because I went to school and I have a PhD in economics and I know all the stats from all the years, and the market does this and does that, and when interest rates go up, this is what typically happens. Typical might be true. Average might be this irrelevant 4.5, of which almost never is there 4 or 5. 5% corrections in a year. It's 14, it's zero, it's one. It's not anywhere near that. The market averages 10% a year. It's never 10. It never is anywhere near 10. Okay, not never, I don't want to exaggerate, but 95% of the time, it's not near 10. It's not. So that's what I'm saying, is that we hunker down to, like, this is numerology. Now, I got much more in the next hour and about this, and I really think it's something that I want to get settled, okay? Because value for clients, value in interpreting what's going on in the markets is not predictive. Having strong opinions is good as long as they're fact-based, they're not political, they're just simply based on what in the world is right in front of us, and they're well thought out. Then have a strong opinion, but don't predict when something's going to occur. All it does is move you in wrong directions. And you can be right. It's okay. I'm going to be right too. Stocks in the long run, they win every time. All right, we'll be back for hour number two after Fox News. Hello and welcome to this special edition of Money Matters. And it's not that special, really, because we're planning on doing some podcasts from time to time. Just try different things. Been doing this for a long, long time. And as times change, we try to change with them. And podcasting is a very, very popular thing in this day and age. Which brings me to this. As things change, we've been doing this a long time. So we go back over 35 years of radio, 42, 43 years of financial planning. Wow, I know I'm getting old. It's true. It is. It did happen. But it is an amazing thing, this changing life. And what I want to talk about today is that you don't make predictions. But we do have strong opinions about things. And those strong opinions don't mean you don't change. Those opinions change, and they have to. And literally, when I started in the industry, gold was at $800 an ounce, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average was at 800. And I'm going to round it off, but today, with dividends reinvested, since there are dividends on the Dow, okay, we're over 90,000. Okay, I know the Dow is not quite at 40,000. I'm fully aware of that, but that doesn't include dividends, which, of course, is part of it. So, yeah. As you can see by the numbers, it's like 60% of it. It's a big part of it. It always has been. It's a big part of the income story, dividends are. That's another story. We'll see if today we might even get back to that a little bit. We'll see. We'll see if we run out of time. But this industry is always predicting. It's acting like it's some kind of a casino game where we're trying to predict when a six is going to come at the craps table. No, I think it's time for a hard eight. I mean, those of you who played craps, you know what I'm talking about. It doesn't matter if you don't. That's predicting, and that's silly, and it should be fun, I hope. I hope it's not a big family problem for you. But it's just that's this set-aside thing that is fun. It is not investing. And so we get into this thing where I think you should buy, sell. And it acts like we're supposed to be predicting some price level. So if I buy Micron, my new price target for Micron is, what do you mean you don't have a price target? You don't come back to our show. People have to have a price target, a target for now. What's going to happen now? And as I mentioned in the last hour, this is something that's so ludicrous to think that you actually have the idea of where the S&P 500 is going to finish the year, because you've done some math and multiplied your always accurate earnings expectations by some historic 16.5 PE ratio, because the market is, you know, I mean, after all, it's spent 9 trading days in the last 30 years at 16.5. Why wouldn't it finish the year at exactly that number? And I'll tell you why. Because it won't. By some magnitude, that's going to be wrong. But don't worry, Wall Street will change their opinions all year long about everything from interest rates to corporate earnings to the stock market price itself to individual sectors that are going to perform well, because they don't all perform the same. Remember, the market is not monolithic. Some sectors are doing well, some are not. And then we, after the fact, explain why. Not before the fact, after. Because again, you can't be right. And this goes on. And I'll just tell you this morning, before I do this podcast, I got to tell you, this was the most incredible eye-opening experience about this. Okay? I'm on the treadmill watching CNBC. And fortunately for me, Jim Cramer is out today. Okay? So I can hear some market outlook without, you know, hearing about the Phillies game or some asinine remarks about something. Okay? No, he's a smart guy. It's fine. But you get my point. It's not, he's not my favorite highly emotionally charged person. So this guy is on there and he's just talking. He must have talked for 5 minutes. And I just could not even begin to tell you how much I'm talking to myself and say, come on, listen, focus. What's wrong with your brain this morning? It wasn't me. He was saying nothing for 5 minutes, like literally nothing. And it would be in everybody's book. It's like, oh, he's a really smart guy and a good announcer. And this is like the prime spot. This is not some guy they're just trying out of high school. Okay. But he said nothing in a very professional way for 5 flipping minutes. Nothing. And it's just amazing to me how this goes on all day long. And again, I don't sit around and watch CNBC. I don't. It would drive me nuts. But you get the point. There's just so much chatter all day about literally nothing. And this doesn't lead us closer to the truth. It leads us further away. And I'm not just putting them down. I'm saying this is the point I'm trying to make. Quit making predictions. Quit listening to people making predictions. But you're allowed to have strong opinions, and they should change over the years. A strong opinion, for example, is you shouldn't own bonds when interest rates on 10-year treasuries are 2%. That's below the inflation rate, and you have to pay taxes on it. Oh, yeah, that would make for a negative return. I don't want to invest in that. I don't care what you did 2 years ago. I don't care what I was taught in school about a 60-40 portfolio. I need to do something different. Okay? Does that make me predictive that interest rates are going to rise? Nope. It says this won't work, and that's my firm opinion. That won't work. I'm not going to do that. End of story. Nothing predictive about that. If we start with a prediction like this, through all of history, stocks outperform bonds over any long period of time. Always it outperforms inflation, cash, bonds, gold by it's not even on the planet, so let's forget about gold. I'm not just here to insult gold. Nothing performs as well as stocks. So will stocks outperform bonds the rest of my life? Yes. That's my firm opinion. Will they outperform this year, next year, over the next 3 years or 5 years? I don't know. I can have an opinion that I am positioning my money for the rest of my life, including income, today, so this is the right portfolio, being in stocks. If an investment won't work anymore because of interest rates are at 2%, I won't own that. That's not predictive of what's going to happen to interest rates. It's simply saying my firm opinion is that won't work. In fact, you have to be married to an opinion incapable of change to say, I want to own bonds in that environment. You have to be married to a situation. That's not what I want to be. I want to be flexible. I don't want to twist in the wind. No, not that kind of flexibility. Not flaky. Buy, sell. No, not flaky. Flexible. It's a huge world of difference, okay? Let's take a couple minutes and talk about that, because let's just kind of walk through where you're thinking years and years ago when you would buy a stock and you had to pay a huge commission to do it, and it was. And you had to pay part of that commission, not expressed, is the difference between the buy price and the sell price, called the spread. And that went to the floor traders. I know, it's a sad thing, the world moves on and technology has completely replaced them, and now you only trade for a penny spread in highly active stocks. In fact, the truth is now it's half a penny. It's a half a penny. Most of our trade executions we get back are in fractions of a penny. They really are. The only reason why they wouldn't be is if you put a limit order in. It's always some fractional amount. Much cheaper today. But the kind of decisions you had to make back then were very, very long dated, because you had an enormous cost up front. Even to buy a mutual fund was 8.5% up front. Some were worse. And I know some of you got in those systematic investment programs and it was terrible. And I know 50%. I get it. You were around a long time ago. But 8.5%, that's ridiculous, because nowadays, through RIA firms like Petzl Financial, people don't pay anything, and they get institutional shares as if they had millions of dollars to invest. It's crazy. It's insane. The cost savings, the margins that people are, you know, the cost of doing all of this, in other words, putting money back into your pockets, the little guy, is amazing, what's happened over the last 40 years. It's stunning. Well, we have to change in that environment is my point. We can't be married to that whole idea. Does that mean we're trading crazily? No, because all statistics say this. What I know is this. The more you trade, the worse you do, and the more taxes you get to pay. Don't do it. And even though the costs are next to nothing, there's still a little bit of what we call, you know, irritation cost, okay? A little difference between the bid price and the ask price, a little bit of transactional, okay? It happens. But most importantly, the more decisions you make, the more you get to get wrong. And that's not good. And you don't give things time to work out. It's automatic. Everybody's eyes go to their portfolio. And this is the thing, too. So over the years, we've found that owning a few stocks has been incredibly incredibly additive to a person's portfolio. Incredibly. Now, you own stocks through mutual funds. You pay a management fee. That's gone way down over the years. I mean, way, way down, right? Just a huge collapse in management fees, which is great for the end consumer. And now we've got exchange-traded funds. We've got so many options that continue to drive that cost down. But it also tends to make people trade more. But let me go back to the stocks, okay? We have found that by owning a few top-performing, blue-chip, beautiful companies that raise their dividends every year adds incredible value to a portfolio. But optically, it's really hard for some people, including us. We don't like to see it, but what you have to end up understanding is this, right? Most of the time, we're wrong. What? Why would I hire you? Okay, that's a fair point, but it's coming from a place that you don't understand. So let me remind you again, Warren Buffett, greatest investor of all time, has been investing for 70 years now. Says he has 10 investment decisions that account for most, if not all, of the returns. That means he's got dozens of hundreds of bad ideas. Right? Hundreds that didn't work. And they're not bad ideas. They were just mediocre at best. That's his words, not mine. Mediocre at best. Those gains came from 10. So I think about that in the portfolios that we have. Apple. How many bad ideas can we have when you have one Apple? You can have a lifetime just having Apple, let alone Google. And why do you think you have those? Because you begin to understand that they're dominating in an industry that's growing. Growing so fast you can't even imagine it. And you have to think this. This is where thinking comes in. So how do you own Apple and it goes up 70-fold? You own it when they invent the iPhone. Because that's what it's up now. I had to update the numbers. 70. Since they invented it, and we knew it was coming, and I had pictures of it, and people were demoing it. Now, a few months later, the stock had already gone up probably 50% because it looked like a pretty cool thing when people could actually go buy it because they actually had to manufacture enough of them, right? So there weren't riots on the street to get the two or three that were coming out every day. So this was a process of an amazing run since the iPhone was invented. But when you see the iPhone, even for the first time, and you understood what its competitors were, the CrackBerry, you knew this was doom for them, and the world was just opening up for Apple. It was game over. And then you own it, and you don't listen to people. Well, nobody's going to spend $1,000 for a cell phone. Yeah, if it puts... Yeah, does everything like it does, I think people might. And they did. They kept buying them and upgrading them and buying them and upgrading them. And then they gave away the software for free, right? So they just, all you did, right? Well, while you're in bed tonight, we're going to go ahead and update for the 30th time during the time you've had our phones. Nobody thinks about that. But do you remember when you had to have the Microsoft, you know, Windows upgrade every year, and it cost you $150 or $250 or $300, whatever it was. And then you put the disk in and wait for a day or two, and it would upgrade. And think about that cost. It was unbelievable. And now Apple's making a ton of money, and you just kind of look at it differently, and they think of it long term. Did I have to analyze phones? Did I have to have a prediction of what the stock was going to do at the end of the year to own Apple? No. Did I have to predict their earnings? No. Did I have to sell and try to trade because some analyst told me that the iPhone 5 wasn't anywhere good enough, as you know, better than the 4 to cause people to go to the store and buy it? So I just was stupid and held on to it. That's how we get multiples. I didn't know Google. I mean, a bunch of kids that are out, and I don't know how to do this thing. And they do this reverse weird auction thing because they hate Wall Street. And so they're in the face of Wall Street. That was their IPO. Did I have to buy it then? No. But when I began to understand what Google was, I didn't get the lowest price. But I think it's up 25-fold since we bought it. That's a lot. That's a really lot. How many Googles do I need? So when I only half jokingly, look, I did own Beyond Meat. I thought it was a good idea. It was a stupid idea. Okay? So I got to write off some, you know, I got a little tax deduction for that. Is that the end of the world? No. Is it the end of the world when we look at our portfolio and you see some dividend payer that is still paying dividends, but man, they're just not growing. They just haven't done anything much. They're underperforming the market. What I'm saying is in your portfolio, we always have people that have problems. And they went on, why do we own that? Well, it's just not working now. It's part of the whole, if you will, mosaic here that we're putting together, this whole beautiful picture, right? As Jennifer Stone always puts, it's like you're just, like, if you take the color, one color out, it changes the whole picture. It doesn't mean it's your favorite color. It doesn't mean it's the best performing thing. But maybe it's in there for income and maybe purposes, for diversification purposes. Right now, it's not its time. And if we sit there and we fixate on our portfolio, this isn't working, that's not working, then how many times would you have bought Apple and gone, it's not working right now, and you miss it because you lose your patience with one of the greatest and largest companies in the world. We have to have the patience for that, and that's the problem, that people don't understand what the difference between having a strong opinion is and making predictions. All right, I got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. All right, so we've been talking about the difference between making predictions and having strong opinions. And of course, how we have to change over time. We have to be flexible, not flimsy, flexible. We have to grow, for crying out loud, right? It's so easy to get old and stuck, all right? We all sit around, look at our dad, look at our grandpas, whatever, and go, man, is he ever stuck in his ways? And we never stop and look in the mirror and go, wow, what am I stuck on? What am I stuck on? And it's a really important thing to ask. And so as we kind of evolve with this, so let me just kind of walk you through what we think about and why we're thinking about this. And I'm going to say this radio thing that I've done for a long time has changed everything in my life, and I mean that. It makes me think differently. How do I share things? How do I tell stories? How do I think about investing? And am I willing to change? I'm much more up on things and also thinking all the time. And it causes me to self-reflect. And all those things that are frightening sometimes, to look deep within, it can be. These are things that can really rock your world and are easier not to do. So it's fun to be in this industry, and it's fun to talk on the radio because it's changed everything for me. So again, I say this often, probably not often enough, but thank you for listening for all these years. It really helps me, and it makes my life a lot more fun. It really does. And so now, with that, what are we talking about, you know, specifically when it comes to investing? Well, when I grew up under John Templeton and Peter Lynch and Michael Price and Warren Buffett and all these value investors and all the great investors, we're all value investors. In other words, you know, if the herd is all running this way, then we got to go the other way, kind of contrarians. And that was good. And then I remember hearing Bill Miller, the great mutual fund manager, one time at a conference, and he said, Amazon is a value stock. What? Amazon. The company that nearly went out of business in 2000. A value stock? It doesn't have any earnings. How can you value it? It has no value. Well, you have to value it on what it, I mean, it said. It promises. We're not going to make any money. We're going to pull it up, put it all back into the business, and you don't want to own us, don't own us. But based on cash flow, it's a value stock. I thought that was incredible. And I started thinking about things differently, and I started investing more for growth, and the world did change. And those are the companies that have been so far and away the most profitable. It's ludicrous. It's not that dividend growers don't do fine, but do I really want to pay a whole lot for Procter & Gamble? yes and no. They raise their dividend every year. It's a great business, but how many more, you know, Ritz crackers can I sell? I don't know if they make Ritz crackers, but you get Pampers, diapers, whatever. They make a lot of stuff, okay? And then we also know that everybody else can make a lot of stuff, and also we also know that they're going to make a lot of stuff under what brand name? Kirkland? The old generic brand? Under whatever brand is Albertson's store brand? Kroger diapers. Okay, well, it's, are those really Pampers in a different? Yeah, they are. What do you think? They have like a whole new factory of inferior plastics and all these things that just fall apart? No, they don't. There's just not the margin there. And so we deal in this world that we have to change just like everybody else does. And that's just with like the whole idea that you shouldn't be owning growth. What about international stocks? Well, it was a great idea. A diversified portfolio always included international stocks, and there weren't enough. And I John Templeton, the great global, you know, hunter, he was the great mutual fund manager, went all over the world. At one time, had 50% of his portfolio was in Japanese stocks. And about 3 years after that, it was zero, like zero. And he was thought to be the idiot of the world. Really was. They really, it was like, yep, John Templeton's lost his touch. They really did have articles like that. And that was, of course, when the Nikkei hit whatever, 35,000. It just finally got back to that, by the way. Now, can you imagine that? That was 1980, late 80s. The Nikkei hit an absurd number. Templeton owned zero. 6 months later, his funds were the top performers. Just in 6 months. Because he had zero global in Japan. Zero. Which was now 50% of the index. He didn't have a prediction. He had an opinion. A strong opinion that they were unownable at that price. That's what I'm talking about. He didn't say the Japanese market is about to crash. We're going to go short it. I'm going to short futures on contracts over the next 3 months because it's going to happen any second now. No, it just made no sense to buy those stocks at that price. Same with Air.com in 2000. The same thing. You don't have to predict that tech stocks were about to crash. That Air.com era was about to end. You just had to know that they made no sense. And you had to have a firm and strong, unwavering opinion, which was, again, not all or none. But when you are entering that period of time, which, believe me, I remember it greatly because my worst year of relative performance was 1999. Best was 2000. Complete mirror of each other, right? Just incredible when you think about it. So when you think about those periods of time, those inflection points, having strong opinions is very, very important. I was pretty young back then too. So it was harder to have that strong opinion. But if you make it all or none, then you own no growth. And you really were in bad shape. But we were way under growth. Because we're also dealing with income clients as well. There's lots of different reasons why a strong opinion is okay, and it isn't a prediction. All right, we're going to take a break here for Fox News, and we got much more on the other side. Welcome back, and thanks for joining us. Okay, so we're talking about predictions versus opinions and how we don't want to make predictions. Predictions are timing. Predictions are ridiculous. But having an opinion of where we are and what looks cheap or dear is important. And as the world changes and that flexibility, we've been talking about that. And I get the whole thing, right? Because people will get in their cars in the morning and they're going to listen to people predict this weekend's football game and the baseball game and then the draft. Who's going to be number one? Who's going to be number two? Oh, I know. And this just goes on and on and on. And you know, it doesn't matter how many times they're wrong. It doesn't. So Mr. Bradshaw, what do you think of the Sunday games today? Well, I've got, I think New York Giants. I think this or that. He's like, well, this last week he got 40% right. And now how you doing for the year? Oh, 43% total. That's great. That's great. Well, guess what? He's on. Not for his predictions, but he has to make them. We're here. I actually really suck at this, okay? I have no idea who's going to win the football game, okay? But I have to say something, so I'd say the Giants, okay? And I'm really, really bad at this, and I'm going to be back next week because you guys like me. Has nothing to do with their success. None. And literally, people are like watching going, You know why? I don't know why. I don't really care. I don't watch pre-football game. I hate it. It sounds like ludicrous banter to me, but lots of people like it, or they wouldn't pay these people millions of dollars to stand up there and be wrong most of the time. And then come back next week and go, and I think the Giants are going to win. Oh my gosh, would you just shut up? You have no idea. You clearly are bad at this, okay? So then we do that. And then we don't get enough of that. So we get in our cars and we listen to ESPN 1, 2, or 5, or 6, or my favorite sports guy that gets in babble about sports all morning and make predictions is on channel 530. Whatever. And it just goes on and on. This is sports. It's in stocks. It's in the weather. Oh, I can't believe that weatherman thinks that. Really? Like, you have your favorite weatherman. No, you have your favorite personality that reads the National Weather Report, for crying out loud. It's not, doesn't make him more right than somebody else. It's just your favorite personality. This goes on and on, and human beings are meant to try to make predictions. That's what's so absurd about all this. That's why I talk about this all the time. We have to move from predictions back into the world of thoughtful, strong opinions. Predictions are time sensitive. Opinions are not. It takes time for the world to recognize something that's there. It takes time for people to stop talking about international diversification the way we did for years. And it worked well. Emerging markets are a classic example of petso genius and petso not so genius. Okay? Emerging markets were really emerging. They really were. And they were like the best performing sector year after year after year. Or, oh, they were second or third, or they finally had a little correction and then they rip higher. Anyway, they were great returns for a decade. Great returns. Really great returns. And then they stopped. Like, stop. And it's been the worst investment. I'm sure there's others. Gold is worse. But other than silly things, okay? Emerging markets have been terrible. Way underperforming everything else. And people say, well, how can we have emerging markets? Because we want it for diversification reasons. No, tell me why. Well, diversification. I mean, I literally had this conversation not that long ago with the head of research, for crying out loud. This is what kills me. It's like, you're the head of research and you can't think at all. You literally have no answer, right? So it's just like, this is not prediction. It's simply saying, I don't want emerging markets in my portfolio when they are full of China. So it's government owned, government taken away. We've watched it. It's not, that's not predictive. They just decide, I don't like that industry anymore, and it's gone. We don't like that guy, the CEO over there. It's a little more important than the president. The president has to be the most important person in China. And he disappears for 8 months or forever. What do I want to do? Own money, own companies in Hong Kong. Oh, well, that's the gateway to China. It was. And Hong Kong was an amazing thing. And now it's not. So why would I want to own it? Well, what about South America? Oh, yeah, I want my money in countries full of dictators. Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. It doesn't sound like a good idea. So when freedom was bursting out everywhere and capitalism was spreading its wings everywhere in the world, I want that. When it is contracting, I don't want anything to do with that. That's a strong opinion. That's not predictive. That's predictive is emerging markets are going to crash, or this is the year of emerging markets. So quit telling me it's a diversification tool. I don't want to diversify out of something into something that I feel strongly is going to be bad. Okay? It has no runway. Or it, like in the case of bonds, it can't work. Interest rates are too low. It can't work. That's not predicting interest rates are going to go higher on crush bonds. It's simply saying it won't work because it doesn't work. Emerging markets aren't working. They're broken. They're controlled by evil people in many cases. They really are evil people. I think people that imprison opponents and imprison their people, starve their people, are evil. Okay, so I just think they are. And so I don't want to invest with that. And when I look at Europe and I hear the stories, and by the way, I have to say, I'm looking hard at more European positions because why? Because they're moving to the right. That's not a political statement. That's a statement of freedom. That's a statement of unleashing human beings to not have government-controlled capitalism. That's what that says. They are starting to move to the right. Is it, oh, well, they're fascists or this. That's mainstream media stuff. I don't even know. I don't live there. All I'm saying is when you get rid of onerous taxes, government regulations that stifle competition and stifle innovation so that you become Europe, the great outdoor museum. We don't invent anything, and we're just slowly dying. That's who we are. You should invest with us because it's diversifying. No, but if you're moving that direction, I can be thinking about it. And I can think about it because they have higher yields than other places. For other reasons, I can own some of that, right? Okay? And now we have things that are called structured notes. Okay, one more quick thing. Where we can now do things that we couldn't do because of technology 20 years ago because they were too expensive, too risky, whatever you want to say. And all those costs are coming down. So when we look at that and we think about it, I don't have to be predictive to say, you always people say, well, if you're not making predictions, we are. I guess we are every day. I predict that Apple's a good company, okay? So I keep owning it. Now, one day, it won't be. And that brings up also real quick, okay, an aside. Psst, quick off-ramp. Yes, you should be selling some as it becomes too much of your portfolio, okay? That's kind of the other. When do you decide to sell? Which I can hear some people's brains out there clicking and going, yeah, but when do you get rid of it? Okay, that's one reason. Number two, I sold some Tesla. This is a pure raw speculation, okay? So it's not in client portfolios. It's just my own thing, okay? And I did some other stuff with it, okay? Because I thought, and you have to treat other people's money differently than you do your own, okay? It's just, you just do. So people say, I want my portfolio like yours. Yeah, there is to a degree. It's the same. But there are certain things that I will do knowing that I don't have to explain that to somebody when it turns out to be a stupid idea, okay? I can live with it. So, yes, when Tesla was being crushed a couple years ago, bought it, did some stuff with options with it, made a lot of money, and I didn't sell at the high. But I sold my final shares a few weeks ago because it doesn't sound very good. Not at the high. You don't get the high price. But I'm not going to sit around in something that isn't doing well because I didn't get the high price. I'm selling because the outlook has changed. Okay, I'm going to run out of time. I got to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll wrap this whole thought process up. Thanks for joining us. All right, welcome back to our final segment here. This is for me is exciting because it really, I'll tell you why. It clarifies what I've been trying to say. So, got an email. It was like I was a little disappointed because your last Zoom talked about, or last radio show, you fill in the blanks because I talk about this all the time. The last meeting you did, says we don't make predictions because they're always wrong. They are always wrong, but predictions are different than opinions. Stocks will outperform every other investment on the planet that's accessible to normal human beings, period. Now, I'm not talking about your own business that you started and you're successful at, you know, roofing or finance like I am. There's nothing that I'll ever invest in better than Petzl Financial, right? It just isn't. Better than me, better than yourself, right? Right? You can't have better returns. But when you're talking about passive investing somewhere else, nothing outperforms stocks. That is my very firm opinion. And when we try to find things, what I'm trying to say on a predictive basis is, I just don't think this is predictive at all. Artificial intelligence is coming. I don't think that's predictive. I think that's in your face. I want money in front of that. Well, what does that look like? It looks like also robotics. Cybersecurity is a problem. Okay? All of these things. But who's going to win? I don't know. But my guess is, to some degree, Google, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon are going to be huge benefactors of AI. Huge. Because they already listen in on every conversation you have. They already steer you to all the websites. You think that's going to be worth more money with AI? Of course it is. They're going to be even smarter. All those things require putting money in front of is not, in my opinion, predictive. It's obvious as the nose on your face. Okay? It is really obvious, and that is my opinion, that we want to put money in front of it. Being predictive is saying when it's going to happen and which company is going to win. I don't have to do that. Now, I can say I'd like to own NVIDIA. Okay, they certainly are the biggest benefactor right now, purely of AI. But I want the whole thing. I want the whole enchilada. And the way to play it as a big chicken is to own the big deal companies that we already own anyway, because they're dominating in the industries anyway, and they've got so much money, they could just spend billions, whatever it takes for Google to get back into the AI game, they will spend, because they have it. Whatever it takes Apple to do to stay on top of the cell phone market, that's what they'll spend, because they have it. So if you want to predict which little company you don't know about yet is going to make it, that's fine, and that's a high-risk game, but I'm just saying there are ways to do that. Those, to me, are not predictive, all right? Now, let me also say this. When things don't work and it's time to pay taxes because you need to go ahead and get rid of that position, it's okay. You made money, now you have to pay taxes. Yesterday was tax day. Man, I hate that day. I needed a drug that I don't cuss all day long. I need that drug. That's the sad thing. But when it comes to making money and you then cash in, you can't be upset that you now have to pay taxes. That's the price you pay to live in the greatest country in the world. Final thoughts. I don't know if this is going to get clipped because we run out of time. I'm going to go over the normal time, and maybe Bo can fix it and allow this to happen instead of playing yet another PSA. So we live in the greatest country in the world. That's not a prediction, that's a fact. We also have to understand that when we live in a world that says, but I really like what's going on in Norwegian free healthcare and things like that, that we have to understand it isn't working. It quit working. Things changed. I'm sorry, but they did. And you can't hang on to it. But America is special, and it's different, and this is not just my opinion, it's, I think, based in fact. But it's not predictive that the greatest country in the world will continue to be the greatest country in the world, and that's where I want to have the bulk of my investments. I don't need to chase around the world. I don't need to put my political bias into it. I just need to find companies and own them in the greatest country in the world, the one that has the best opportunities for all of their citizens. And I will do my best to fight hard to not have politicians ruin it. But I can't stop it. But I don't have to be panicked about every little thing that's going on. I don't. And the fact that we were born here in the greatest time that man has ever been on earth is an amazing blessing. It just is stunning to me to think about how much abundance there is. It may not be abundant when you go on the social media, when you look at all the pretty pictures out there of a life that maybe isn't even being lived. Maybe it's all fake. Most of it is. But it is difficult for people to see that and not play the comparison game. Don't do that with your investments. If you're putting money away and it's growing and doing what you want it to do, then don't play the comparison game. Well, I wish I had more in this or more in that. And don't look at every individual holding and wish you hadn't owned it. It doesn't help. It's all part of the mosaic. And predictions, in my opinion, are just for fun. They're very misleading and most of the time wrong. But opinions, based in fact, not emotion, is the way to invest. Have a great rest of the day.